Please remember, the views and opinions expressed by this show or any other show on DV Radio and its guests are strictly those of said individuals and do not reflect those of the DV Radio staff, nor the staff of Dysfunctional Veterans.
Hello and welcome to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog. I'm your host, Joaquin Watai. I'm beginning this show in order to continue to spread the word about PTSD service dogs in general, the Americans with Disabilities Act, and just various aspects of service dog life.
How do you deal with the adversity that can occur when somebody objects to the presence of your service dog?
Focus on your dog.
A service dog cannot be a protector. Many handlers don't know what they can't do.
The Service Dog Show with PTS Dog right here on WDVR DV Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog. I am Joaquin Watai, author of the book PTS Dog, Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder and the Service Dog. I'm beginning this show in order to help continue to spread the word about PTSD service dogs in general, the Americans with Disability Act, and just various aspects of service dog life. Today's show, we have my friend Josh Drotty, an Army veteran and service dog trainer since 2009. Josh, how are you doing?
Doing great, man. Enjoying the beautiful weather.
All right. So just to get a kind of a picture of who you are, tell me a little bit about your Army career.
Well, I was Army from 2000 to 2006. I was deployed to Iraq. I spent 13 months over there where technically I was blown up a few too many times. And that's where the basis of my issue started.
Okay. And what made you decide to get a service dog?
Well, at that point in time, I'd hit a real low in my life and I didn't know anything about service dogs. And I got a German Shepherd I found on Craigslist and the lady donated him to me. And the more I worked with him professionally, the more I realized that he would sense my anger attack, my angers, my emotions. He'd wake me up from dreams. And I just started noticing this. He was doing this on his own. My first wife, she was in school to be a canine handler. And helping her go through her canine classes, I started training my dog. And I realized how much that he was helping me with my problems. So I began looking in a way to become a certified trainer to, I guess, help my emotions and help my personal well-being. And I went through a vocational rehab program with Animal Behavior College, and I started doing mentor training, and I became specialized in service dogs. And the more I would train my dog, the more calm that it brought me, the more peacefulness, I guess you could say, and more therapeutic values. He would help me go out in public. I would not leave my house for months at a time. But when I had my dog, he made me go out. Yes, when I had my dog, my socialization became so much better out in public. I was able to go out and actually go to Walmart, complete a full grocery list. Before, I would go and fill up my cart with my grocery list and have one little thing set me off. And I'd just say, screw it. I'd leave my grocery cart. I mean, I became reclusive and wouldn't leave my house. My service dog, he began picking up on the little things. I was a driver while I was in Iraq. I drove 160,000 miles, and I had a lot of bad PTSD and anger issues when I would drive. Well, when my dog was with me, he could sense this before it started happening. He would crawl in my lap, start licking my face, and I soon made the association of what he was alerting me to. So I would pull over on the side of the road. I would stop and calm down. I would get out and I'd let him go potty. I'd walk around. I'd work on my breathing. When we went out in public, I would get real uptight and nervous and I wouldn't talk. I would shut down. But with my dog next to me, I would have to give him commands like, all right, buddy, let's go right. Let's go left. Let's go to this department. Let's go find my truck. So he helped me learn how to talk again to him. And that in turn helped me start talking better in public. But I always had this problem where I'd get real nervous and I'd get agitated. But when you're training a dog, you have to be really calm. You have to find that peace within yourself for that dog to listen to you. So that would like a command in an angry tone is completely different than a command in a calm tone. So I had to learn that distinction, and that in turn helped me learn how to calm myself, different breathing techniques, different calming techniques, not only to calm myself, but to calm my dog in public. And I just kept building and building on what I was building towards.
So you made a good point there about the process of training the dog being a part of the treatment for a PTSD sufferer. You're absolutely right. You can't yell at a dog and expect it to perform. You've got to communicate to the dog. And I try to relate it to this way. When you're yelling at the dog in the dog's mind, you're barking. Because,
yes,
you know, you're raising your voice. You're making big noise like they do. Where if you calmly talk to the dog and give it commands and correct if it's doing something it's not supposed to, reward when it's doing something it is, you learn an entirely new method of communicating yourself.
Yes, it's all about tone of voice. The way I explain it to people is, imagine that you have a transfer student from Germany. And you're trying to teach them English. Well, you can say the word stop, or you can angrily say stop. I mean, there's two different languages whenever you're talking to somebody trying to help them learn a new language. So whenever you're training your dog, you have to use the same tone of voice for that command. Otherwise, the dog's going to think you're saying something completely different each time.
Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about the work you've done training service dogs.
I believe right now I've helped train a total of 25 teams that I like to call them. It's not training the service dog, it's training the handler, more training the handler to learn and to read what the service dog is telling them. Most time the dog knows what they want to do and what they're alerting to. Is the handler doesn't know and can't read the dog. I'm on my third service dog right now, and I have the fourth in training. I've helped train some of my battle buddies that I was deployed with, my gunner from Iraq. I helped train him and his service animal and several others that I've been around with. But the transformation for these people, one female that I helped train, and this is purely accidental. We went to a hunt and she was there by herself and she was scared to sleep by herself in the hotel room at night. And I had a dog in training with me, and I'm like, here, why don't you just sleep with him in your room tonight and see how it goes? It was a total transformation that next morning for her. She's like, I haven't got to sleep like this or that much sleep in years. And she went on, and 2 weeks later, she found an organization to help her get a service dog, and she's had a service dog for the past 3 years. Almost each veteran I've met in that aspect, it's been a total transformation. And it's awesome watching them go from the fear in their eyes to having that calmness or the ability to go out.
Definitely. It's funny because your story about not being able to go shopping, not being able to go out, isolating yourself is exactly my story. I mean, it's the same. I lived 20 miles out of town. The closest neighbor was a mile away, I had clear lines of sight, 360 degrees, if you know what I mean. I would make it 10, 15 feet into the Walmart and just turn around and leave in a panic. I was done. I'd go sit in the truck and wait for my spouse at the time to do the shopping. I couldn't handle it. You said that you've worked with or helped start several organizations.
Yes, sir. Well, whenever I first started in New Mexico, we had an organization called Pets for Vets, and we started, we came up with a training program. Well, I got hooked on meth really hard while I lived in Albuquerque. And for 5 years, I was on meth really hard, and I couldn't seem to break away from it. I moved back to Louisiana. I mean, don't get me wrong, I was still doing my training, and I was helping others, but I wasn't helping myself at that time. So I moved back to Louisiana, and I started going back to my meetings at the VA. I learned that a service dog is not complete 100% medicine. It's a tool in your toolbox that you've got to learn how to use. And I worked with my therapist at the VA. I got on the right kind of medications. And I used the service dog as a tool whenever I needed him. And, I mean, needing him is 24/7. But learning how to use him along with therapy, along with medications, was the hardest part for me. I was able to quit meth cold turkey. I've been clean going on 7 years now. And that was mainly due to me wanting to better myself for my veterans that I'm helping, for my service animal, and just be that clean bill of health that I wanted. Mm-hmm. Moving back to Louisiana was a huge eye-opening experience, though, because I'm not going to say we're backwoods, but we're behind the times a little bit as far as therapeutic values goes and service animals. Mm-hmm. When I moved back here, everybody thought I was either blind or deaf whenever I'd go out in public. We were very normally the very first service dog team that people had ever seen. And that was a real hard stigma to get overcome. But we have done so much public awareness around, you know, South Louisiana and Louisiana itself, that we have grown. Like, we'll go to schools and we'll do assembly programs. I've worked with the local police departments and trained them how to react to veterans with PTSD, veterans with service animals. I worked with the ambulances, the paramedics, some of the local hospitals. They now have service dog policies that's written on paper because we helped start that. That's so awesome. It's just, go ahead.
I said, that's awesome. That's fantastic.
It's just learning what we need. And one of the things that I am real adamant on my training is zero aggression. Service dog cannot be a protector. It cannot be aggressive in any manner. And a perfect example of that is a veteran PTSD episode and cops show up. If that dog has any type of aggression, the police have no other option but to put that dog down if it's aggressive. Or if you're having a medical emergency and EMTs arrive, your dog cannot protect you from EMTs. So it has to be very well socialized, very well traversed. And that's been one thing that's been the hardest to teach veterans about their animals is, you know, don't let it become the aggressor. It's not your protector. It's your doctor.
Right, right. And, but on the other hand, dogs will be dogs. What do you, and dogs have bad days.
Yes, they do.
How do you deal with that? For example, my service dog Skeeter is an Alaskan Malamute. He's a 100-pound male. And if a dog attacks him, he will respond. And it's not that he's being aggressive, but if he is provoked, it's just the breed mentality of an Alaskan Malamute. He doesn't stand for being picked on. However, he would never bite a person unless they were attacking me. But he is not aggressive is in regards to meeting people or dealing with someone, like if I'm talking to people. But what do you do? What do you do if you're handling your dog and it's having a bad day and something, for whatever reason, it gets distracted and it reacts? How do you handle that as you're working with your dog?
Well, there's always going to be a bad day, and there's always going to be something that happens. As a handler, you have to be able to recognize that. A lot of times you can't recognize it until it's too late, and I completely understand that. But one thing that I've learned is that you cannot control your environment. You can only control yourself and your dog. If your dog's having a bad day and he's having an off day, check yourself. A lot of times if they're acting out, something's off with you and you really don't know it. If they are having a bad day, bring them home. Let them relax a little while, a day or so. Grunt, whenever he's hurting, I can tell when he's having an off day because he's hurting. It took me a while to realize that. I've had, in the past 3 weeks, I took Grunt out to Tractor Supply just to go get dog food. And while the checkout lady is like, "Can I pet your dog?" I'm like, "Yes, ma'am." I said, "Grunt, sit. Grunt, go say hi." That's his command. To go up and meet people. I have no problem with him going up and meet people. It helps me talk about my issues. But while I was there, I noticed Grunt was acting kind of antsy. I knew he had to go potty, but I was trying to make him wait till we got out of the store. He went around the counter and used the bathroom. I mean, pooped and peed on the floor, and things like that happened. Grunt's 5 years old and is very well trained, very well socialized. Accidents happen. Mistakes happen. Dogs aren't perfect. So you just have to be able to roll with the punches and be very forgiving for him and understand that no matter what, he's still a dog.
You know, that's a really good point. And that's one thing I think that's a major misconception out there in the public is that service dogs are these really highly trained dogs and they will never do this and it will never do that. And the fact is what they're describing is a robot. And a service dog is absolutely not a robot. It is a dog that performs tasks, but it's still a dog first. And people forget that, and they expect something completely different than the reality of handling a dog on a day-to-day basis. I've seen comparisons of a dog's intelligence to that of a 2 or 3 year old child. And I don't think that's too far off, especially their emotional intelligence. Dogs, for the most part, in my experience, act like young children.
Yes.
And
yes, they do.
Accidents happen. And that, you know what the thing is, though, is what separates the what I will call a professional service dog handler, because you live day in and day out handling that service dog. It becomes your vocation. A professional service dog handler, a person who understands what they're doing and working with their dog and who takes responsibility for their dog's actions, apologizes, asks for cleaning materials, and cleans up when those accidents happen. And, you know, we're seeing, especially right now with the recent changes in airline rules about emotional support animals on the planes, we're seeing a lot of backlash about that. But people are taking animals that don't have extensive training, that don't have a lot of exposure to the public, that aren't experienced in different situations and how to remain calm and confident during them, and they're putting them into situations where the dog doesn't know what to do. And that's when you get the dogs peeing on the aisles in grocery stores and barking at people and things like that. And I think that in general, and I'm not putting down emotional support animals in any way, shape, or form. I am confident that they are a very important part of people's lives, the people that use them. But an emotional support animal is not a service dog. It does not have the extensive training a service dog does. It is not trained to go where you go at all times. It's essentially a pet that makes you feel better. Whereas a service dog is trained to perform tasks to assist you with your disability. There's a difference there.
I've also noticed there's a different mindset between the handlers of service dogs and handlers of emotional service animals. A service dog handler, a real handler, is 100% focused on that dog. Everything relates around that dog because without that dog, they cannot function. An emotional service animal handler, they're more of the easygoing type. The dog is more relaxed. You'll see them more on the retractable leashes, things like that, where they're more forgiving on what the animal does. And going back to your, flying on a plane, a service dog handler normally takes extreme precautions. No water, no food an hour or two before the flight. They make sure they have bags, paper, you know, they're prepared for what's going to happen. Most of the emotional service animals and things I've seen like that coming through airports, coming through the malls, people aren't expecting anything to happen. They don't plan ahead. So that's one thing I think that a service dog handler has above an emotional service animal. You know, they rely on that service dog to function.
Mm-hmm. So, and the emotional support animal, like I said, it's not... It's not an invalid for part of a person with mental health issues treatment at all, but it is also not guaranteed the same access that a service dog that has been trained for a long time has. But let's get back to training. When does training end?
Training never ends. Never. Every day you encounter something new, something you haven't been around before, something that's new to the dog, whether that's South Louisiana, that's ice maybe, because we don't have ice very often, or snow. It can be something as simple as a person on crutches, if that dog's never seen a person on crutches, motorized wheelchairs. It depends on the level of socialization with the dog. Grunt had a bad thing with statues for a while. He didn't understand what a statue was. So it was real interesting having to socialize him with inanimate objects and sitting there, it's okay, buddy. It won't hurt you. It's fake. Come on. I got you. Come look at it. Come touch it. I mean, there's little things like that. We got on a train one time. And if you've never been around a train, it's a big, huge hunk of steel metal that's moving and it shakes the ground. It's just odd for him. Some people, it's escalators. There's a real big fear of escalators, and for good reason. Dogs' toenails get caught in it all the time. Anything that you're doing to putting that dog out of its comfort zone is a training method. I take my dogs. We go to the parish fairs, and we walk through the livestock exhibits. I make sure Grunt's very well socialized around other animals and things like that, so we have less of them times in public where he's scared or he's jumpy and things like that. But a lot of times, like little kids in Walmart, we'll be sitting there checking out a Walmart and everything is great. And Grunt, a little kid, I'll turn around while I'm checking out and a little kid's hugging Grunt. You can't train for that. Trainers, they always, you know, they never plan on people just coming up out of random and hugging their animals. Mm-hmm. So they have to be really very well versed. Grunt won't move, and he'll be sitting there, and he'll look at me while the kid's hugging. He goes, Daddy, I didn't move. I'm still right here. I didn't do anything.
Yep.
So you have to take everything. As a handler, you have to look at everything, all these new situations, as new training experiences.
That's absolutely, I agree with you 100%. Training never ends. And I think that's a big part of why the writers of the Americans with Disabilities Act, and specifically the segment on service dogs, did not specify a requirement for certification of training, because if you're doing it right, it's never done. So I want to talk about, you've had some experience with some organizations, and you and I seem to be on the same page in as far as what I refer to as cooperative training, where, like you said, you're not training the dog so much as you're training the handler. You're training the veteran how to work with his dog. There are other types of organizations. There are people who have organizations that have puppy raisers that take puppies,
yeah,
and socialization and all that. Talk to me a little bit about, in your experience, what you think about that approach to training as a PTSD service dog.
I've worked with several different organizations. One of my main dispels about these organizations is they're more about quantity. I'm all about quality. They were more about pushing out number of service dogs to veterans and trying to help each, you know, trying to get them out there as fast as possible. And I didn't agree with that one at all. I mean, one veteran is completely different from the next veteran and how you train them. One veteran might have a brain injury. The other one might be missing a leg, but have no problem with memory. So each person that you meet, you've got to get a specific training regimen for that person and that dog. Now, as far as these puppy raisers, and I have had very minimal success in taking a pre-trained dog and giving it to an untrained veteran. A lot of times it does not end well. But at the same time, a lot of the organizations, they're more worried about any veteran that comes and asks for a service animal. They'll try to find a service animal for that veteran. Not every veteran is in the right spot to have a service dog at that point in time. Service dogs are not an instant fix, regardless of what these organizations say. Getting a brand new service dog for a veteran is probably one of the most overwhelming things they'll ever do in their life, because suddenly everybody knows there's something wrong with you. It's like carrying balloons and wearing a vest that says, hey, I'm disabled. So these organizations, they're real big on getting the dog with the veteran. But as far as the aftercare, after training, making sure their training's up to, you know, up to par, make sure they're still doing the training. Because a veteran, if you don't stay on them, they get very lax about everything. Yeah.
Well, but you know what? It's a difference in approach. This organization says, yeah, we'll give you a trained service dog. Boom, here you go. Here's your new Honda. Here, you know, it's a stick shift. Here's the keys. But you don't know how to drive a stick shift. The Honda's worthless to you. However, if you are part of the process of building the car, you understand what the transmission does, how it works, you go through training to learn to shift and you know, drive the car smoothly, then you're invested in that. You're invested in that vehicle. You're invested in being the best driver you can be. And it's kind of the same with the service dog. If you are a part of the process of training the dog, you learn that you can't yell. You learn to be calm and take your time and be clear and not confuse, you know, not give your dog confusing messages. When you learn this, you become invested in it, and it changes your whole thought process and your whole, the whole way that you approach things.
Many times, whenever I find a veteran that wants a service dog and they've never been around them, I tell them, all right, man, come over to my house and let's go out a few times with my service dog. That way you can see what it's like in public. That way you know what you're getting into. Because many times when people see me at the VA or they see me out in public, all they see is an extremely well-trained dog that's helping me out. And when they get a service dog, they expect what they see from like Grunt or one of my other trained dogs. It takes years to get there. And that's the part that you have to help veterans understand is it's not an instantly trained dog the second you get it. You have to keep building and building and building upon that training.
So it's a completely different mindset, but it's very similar to the mindset that you had when you were on active duty. You start training, you start learning, you start getting better at what you do. You train more, you get better, you train more. It is a progress. It's a process.
Yes. Even getting the veterans, like I'll have them sit down and I'll have them make up a list of commands that they want to teach that dog. And then we'll start using, I'll go over the terminology that they should and should not use. Like a few terms that you shouldn't use when you're training, especially Malamutes, German Shepherds, any kind of aggressive terms, mm-hmm. like the word get. Mm-hmm. I refuse to have any of my students use that word when they're like, they tell their dog, go get this, go get that. Instead of get, use the word fetch.
Yep.
And that's only because the stigma is, hey, you're going to get mad at somebody, go get them. Mm-hmm. No. So we take out any and all kind of aggressive terms and we break it down and I make sure that they know that it's not about being a protective dog, because that dog can be very protective instantly if you allow it.
Right, right. You definitely have to be aware of your dog's mindset, understand its signals, and understand when it's your responsibility as the handler to intervene and redirect that dog's attention.
That is absolutely correct. And in part of going out in public with me before they get a service animal, we'll have people come up. And if they don't, I'll go talk to the manager and tell them to have one of their employees to come up and ask me, sir, you can't have your service dog in here. So before the veteran even gets a dog, they know what it's like from being around me to have people come up and say, you can't have your dog in here. Say you're not allowed or you're not allowed in this area. A lot of times these program trained dogs at the end, all they do is give you a card that says, I'm a service dog. I can do this, this, and this. Many handler knows exactly what they can do. Many handlers don't know what they can't do. And there's a big line there between, you know, service dog handlers that they don't understand that they have to be in control of their dog at all times. They have to maintain control and discipline of their dogs. They can't go into clean rooms, sterile rooms. They can't go anywhere where open food is. Oh, what's that word? Where open food is made. Mm-hmm. So there's times and places that a business can actually ask a service dog and their handler to leave. But most handlers think that no matter what, that law protects them and that they have every right to be there no matter what.
Yes, that's true. Anywhere food is being prepared, any sterile environments, dogs are not allowed. That doesn't mean that a dog can't go with you to the hospital or to the emergency room. And that's been made very clear both in the ADA and in the Centers for Disease Control. They did an environmental study on the impact of service dogs' presence, and they came to the same conclusion. The only places, say, for an example, in a medical clinic or hospital where a service dog cannot be because of the risk of infection is a clean area where you have to scrub in to go in, isolation rooms, and surgery theaters. But the service dog...
Oh, tattoo parlors is another one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, tattoo parlors, not a sterile environment. But as a handler, you have to be considerate at times of the people around
you.
Technically, by the letter of the law, you can take a service dog into a tattoo parlor, but you should not take the service dog back to where you are getting the tattoo.
Absolutely correct.
And, you know, because their instrumentality, their work surfaces, all of that is sterile, or is supposed to be by law. If it's not sterile, find a different parlor.
Exactly. And another one I've ran into is churches.
Churches are not covered by the Americans with Disabilities Act. They are exempt.
Exactly. A lot of people do not know that. So the first time I was asked to leave by a church, I didn't fully understand it. But I learned from that experience, you know, and 90% of the churches I've been to have openly accepted, you know, my service dog. There's one Catholic church who wouldn't. And I couldn't argue with them. I mean, I understood people were scared. I have no problem if people tell me they're scared of my dog, they have allergies. By law, yeah, I can be that guy and I can stay there no matter what. But I'd rather take it upon myself to remove myself from the situation to help people feel, I guess, safer or more comfortable. But that's only because I've had a service dog for 7 years now, and I'm far enough ahead of my treatment that I can remove myself, and I care about the other people's well-being. But by law, I don't have to.
Right. Well, and the trick to going somewhere, say, like a church, is call ahead of time. Talk to the pastor. Hey, you know, I'm really interested in coming to your church, but I use a service dog. Would it be a problem if I brought my service dog with me? And if they say, I'm sorry, but we just can't accommodate you, find a different church. There will be one that will allow you. And as far as allergies are concerned, generally, if you're on opposite sides of the room, the dog's presence isn't going to bother the person with allergies. And the ADA talks a little bit about allergies to service dogs. Allergies are not a valid reason to exclude the presence of a service dog in a facility. However, it is up to, like, say, if you're in a restaurant, it is up to the staff of the restaurant, if somebody is severely allergic to dogs, to try to accommodate them by keeping them and the person with the service dog as far apart in the facility as possible.
Yes. Now, where I'm from in South Louisiana, we have a real big stigma where everybody sees a German Shepherd. They see a drug dog, a police attack dog. So many times we're out in Walmart, we'll turn the aisle, and there'll be people start screaming at the top of their lungs, running away, hollering for management. I mean, just like the dog's trying to attack them. And Grunt's just sitting there looking at me like, Dad, what's going on? Why is everybody hollering and running away? So many people have that fear of dogs if they've either had a bad experience in their childhood or they see it on TV. So I have to be very accommodating with that also around here.
Well, it all comes down to being considerate. Just because you are disabled
and
use a service dog.
Educated.
And educated. Yeah, absolutely. Understanding your rights, understanding the law. But being considerate, too. Just because I have a service dog doesn't mean I'm always going to take him. Perfect example, I had a VA appointment this morning. Malamutes are double-coated dogs. They have a very thick undercoat of insulating fur. he's blowing his undercoat that he does it twice a year. He's just too messy, no matter how much I brush him right now, for me to take him into a medical facility. I, as a considerate handler, chose not to use him. It did not make my VA visit easy, but in this case, the argument could be said, and the dog could ask to be removed because he's not clean, because he's shedding so heavily. It's a natural thing. He's not sick. It's just what Malamutes do. But, you know, that's, again, you have to be educated, and you have to understand, as a responsible handler, that there are times when you need to consider other people. Now, one of the times yes. where I will absolutely refuse is breed ban type situations. If the dog is trained, if the dog behaves, I don't care what breed it is. I don't care that pit bulls are banned in this city. It is my service dog. It is working. It is trained. It is not causing an issue. I will stand up and fight a breed ban kind of situation.
Every time. Especially if I know the handler and I know the training behind the dog. I have went to court before and stood behind some of my handlers and their dogs regarding the ban. And I have vouched for them in court before. And I have no problem doing that if I've trained them and I know the mentality of them. You was talking about being considerate. That goes back to every time I go, me and Grunt, we do a lot of trips and we stay in hotels a lot. One thing I always make sure I do is carry sheets with me, white sheets, and I put over the bed, I put on the floor, everywhere that I can think of to help make the cleaning for the cleaning people easier for them. And if you don't have the sheets, all you have to do is go up to hotel maintenance and ask if they have any old sheets that they're getting rid of. And many times they have stained and holed up sheets that they'll give you. And they have no problem helping you out with your service animal to help keep the room clean and help you to do a better job.
Absolutely. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about how to deal with access issues.
DV Radio.
MyDVStore.com. Dead and well began with item 69776. Can I get stickers?
Nope.
I got a deal for your country decal. Deal for your country decal. Who here a t-shirt? Anyone with a t-shirt?
Nope.
Let me get a bacon eating card. I'm crazy about some t-shirt.
Nope.
Now I got a mug, TV mugs. I got mugs. Let me hear DV Farm Coin with DV Coins. DV Farm Coins with DV Coins. Gone once, gone twice. Sold to MyDVStore.com.
Don't touch anybody and don't yell.
This is The Account.
The Account, as Ron Ripley knows.
I'll give it a whirl.
You gotta give it a whirl, man. Yeah. It's good stuff.
The safe word is harder.
Wow. That's a vision right there.
From Studio 395 in San Diego, California.
Feel pretty darn good.
It's the Struggle Brothers Show.
I'll need a fucking Tide Pod right now. I don't give a shit.
We talked about this.
Anyone that's offended, fuck them.
I'm a big fan, personally.
Stay tuned to
WDVR
from
DVRadio.net.
We don't break the laws. We just make up our own.
DV Radio.
DV Radio is for our fellow brothers and sisters, and it's all free of charge for our listeners, our guests, and even those that have shows right here on DVRadio.net. We do everything in-house, from mixing and recording ads and shows to the website and all that you get from us. We love promoting veteran-owned businesses and highlighting those in the veteran community. So if you would like to continue to hear what we bring to you and have even more in the future with the best quality that we can possibly bring to you, please head over to DVRadio.net and click that PayPal donation button. Any amount is welcome, from $1 to $100 million that your uncle lets you in his trust fund. So please head over to DVRadio.net and click that PayPal donation button right now. Oh, ah.
DV Radio. And welcome back. This is the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog. I'm here with Josh Drotty, who is a dog trainer, service dog handler, veteran. And we're going to talk a little bit about what to do, how to handle it when you are denied access to a place that you have a right to go to under the ADA. And before we really start getting into that, I want to make sure it's clear to people, your dog, your service dog, is not who is protected by the Americans with Disabilities Act. The Americans with Disabilities Act is a civil rights act that protects you, the handler. It protects your right to use your medical equipment, which is what a service dog under the ADA is considered. It's even in the medical equipment section of Titles 2 and 3 of the law. It is your right to use your medical equipment when accessing a facility. So the dog is not protected. And I think that the way that the law is written is really good, because the dog still has to meet certain standards in order for you to be protected to take the dog. Such, the dog has to be under the handler's control at all times. The dog has to be trained to perform specific tasks, individually trained to perform tasks to assist you with your disability. And the dog has to be housebroken, which is not to say, and we touched on this a little earlier, accidents do happen. But, your dog's not going to walk in and start marking. Let's use an example right out of my own personal experience. I try to check into a hotel, and I'm told that I cannot bring my service dog into the hotel. So what do you do when that happens?
I've had that happen once or twice, and I'll sit there and I will talk with the manager if there is a manager on duty. Whenever I very first got my service animal, I was uneducated, and I got angry and upset. And my dog fed off of me, and he started becoming agitated, upset, acting out. As a handler, you have to be, I guess, prepared for these situations. A handler knows the laws, knows the rules. And whenever that does happen, you're not going to change things by getting mad. You're not going to change their point of view that night. Most situations like that, I've went to another hotel. If I haven't been able to calmly talk to the people, last thing you want to do is get upset and get irate, because A, you're just being a veteran with PTSD and showing anger, but you also have to be an advocate and a role model to show people that service, because most times these people have never seen a service animal before. They don't know the rules. They don't know the laws, and you're not going to change that right then, right there. So I'll find another hotel, and I will contact the management of the hotel that denied me, and I'll work with them to come up. I don't want refunds. I don't want monetary, I don't want anything back. I want to train their staff. I asked them, look, can we do classes? Can we teach your staff what a service animals are? Things like that. We try to be proactive for the service dog community instead of sitting there and refusing to go anywhere, having the cops called, because that's not going to help anyone, including the veteran. That just puts them that much more in the public eye, that much more out there. And an upset veteran with a service animal is just not good.
Well, and not only that, but if you escalate to the point where the cops are called, and the cops show up and you're that irate and you're yelling and screaming, they're going to put you in cuffs and animal control is going to take your dog. Then you have a whole new set of issues. Whether you're charged or not, you're separated from your service dog when they haul you off. And that's never a good situation.
If police come, many times I've had police called on me before, and I've gotten a ride to the hospital by police. Thankfully, our police force around here, I was one of the very first cases of PTSD that they had seen. So, and they began to understand what my dog did. So they allowed my service dog to ride in the cruiser with me to the hospital. I was then taken from that hospital to the VA hospital by ambulance. And thankfully, the ambulance and everything, they allowed my dog to ride with me in the ambulance for an hour and a half to the closest hospital. But they didn't have to do that. So as a handler, it's something that you have to keep in the back of your mind is, yes, he has a right. Your dog has a right to be there with you. But all those rights go out the window whenever you're arrested or you're put inpatient in a hospital or something like that. You don't have that right anymore.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, I've been contacted a couple of times about, well, I'm getting ready to go inpatient at the VA hospital, and they're telling me I can't take my service dog. And they're right that you can't take your service dog if the presence of the service dog will fundamentally alter the nature of the services provided. A hospital where you're inpatient is not set up for you to be able to get up every 2 hours to go out and potty your dog, food, water, you know, the needs of a service dog in that situation. Oh. Not to mention the danger posed to your dog by other patients, by other people.
I did an inpatient program in Colorado, Pueblo, Colorado, for 29 days. And I was the first person that came through there with a service dog, and they allowed me in there. And I thought it was the greatest thing on earth that they allowed my dog to come with me. Until about the second or third day in, whenever he started, you know, he would poop on the floor because I couldn't get him down 9 stories on the elevator and outside to the grass in time. Or people who, this is a simple feeding and watering, and you're in an inpatient program. All right, so you have a leather 6-foot leash. Guess what? They don't allow you to have a belt, shoelaces, or anything like that while you're inpatient. Mm-hmm. So your leash becomes a dangerous object to other veterans who are in there who's going through trauma. They could see that as a tool to use for suicide. Mm-hmm. While I was in there, we also, some of the other patients, well, he's being treated special because he has a service dog. They started acting out aggressively towards my service dog, and was few of the guys said that they want to kill him. So that set me back further in my treatment just from seeing the other veterans, the way they acted towards my service dog. Because the only thing I can control in that area was my service dog. I can't control other people's feelings or what they do or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So whenever I came back to Louisiana and I went to an inpatient program at the VA hospital, I was really upset whenever I first learned that they wouldn't allow my dog in there. But then once I was inpatient, I calmed down and I started seeing clearly that inpatient program is not a place for a service animal, only because of the mixed amount of emotions from all the other veterans in there. And whenever you're inpatient, you need to focus entirely on you 100%. And if you have that service animal in there, you're not allowed to do that. Whenever you go inpatient at the VA, that's more or less your last chance. Mm-hmm. If you don't learn how to use that, it'll end up hurting you really bad emotionally and physically. So you have to use that time to get back on your medicine, get right. And you have to accept that if you're inpatient at a VA, you don't have the ability to control that service dog right now. You need to find the ability to control yourself, and then you can apply that to your service animal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a hot button issue, but when you really sit down and think it through, that's not the right environment for your dog's safety or for your safety. And it's again goes back to consideration. So you're not working with a service dog training program currently, are you?
No, I am not. I stopped training professionally with programs like that. It took a lot out of me mentally, and I became really emotionally attached to the dogs and the veterans, and it would kill me seeing the organization step in and go against some of the things that I was trying to do or, you know, something that I was training. So now I do it specialized one-on-one with veterans who come up and ask me, and they had the need for it. Now I take guys out kayak fishing. That's what I do.
Well, yeah, that's what I was getting at, is what are you doing now?
I'm chapter coordinator for a local organization called Heroes on the Water, and we take veterans out kayak fishing. I'm also an advocate for about 4 other veteran organizations that we have around here, which they all know if they have a veteran who's wanting a service dog, they send them to me, and I'll take them out in public with mine so they can see what it's like. And I'll work with them one-on-one for specialized problems that they encounter. Not training with an organization allows me more freedom to help out people, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely, absolutely. I also heard that you're working with people in recovery.
Yes, I do a lot of abuse, substance abuse. I do a lot with addictions. Because I was on meth for 5 years and I was able to get off of it, I smoked marijuana for the longest time. I've been clean for that for almost 2 years now. And it's a real big passion of mine to be able to work with these individuals, because they normally don't see people who have overcome their addictions or who can be that stable shoulder. One of my really close veterans, he he broke down to me last year and told me that he had been using meth, and we got him special help that day. At the same time, I'll have veterans' wives call me, hey, my husband's in a bad spot. He's trying to commit suicide. I've been known that day to go to their house, get all their weapons out of their house. I'll get them out fishing on the water. I'll get them out doing something besides sitting in their house self-destructing. Mm-hmm. Addictions is really bad among the veteran community.
Yeah, it is. So I asked you about that to ask, would you say that part of the reason you're able to now reach out, turn it around and reach out to other veterans is because you were used a service dog?
Yes. It's given me a lot of firsthand experience. Like I said, I was blown up way too many times over in Iraq, and between my driving, the PTSD, the TBI, it gives me that special opportunity. I don't go into a situation telling the veteran, oh, I know how you feel. I've been there. I've been this. Veterans don't need that. They just need an outlet to talk. And if they can see that you're making it and that you can be a role model and there's somebody that they can look up to, they have a lot easier time to follow you instead of a doctor at the hospital. I have a white coat phobia. I hate going to the VA and going to see my doctors only because it's something that I'm feel forced to. I don't like going into the doctor's office, stuff like that. But if I can be that role model that these veterans or these veterans' wives need, and it's called the support system. You know, they have a great support system. Yes, I've had to go pick up veterans and take them to inpatient at the VA hospital, drive them personally and drop them off. That's not an easy thing to do at all. And many times they hate me for a week or two. But the veterans also come up to me about a month later thanking me for saving their lives, thanking me for helping them out. You never know who you're going to touch and who you're going to reach out to while you're in public. So every time we go out with my service animal, people come up to me and ask questions, and they're like, oh, I'm sorry, I don't mean to be bothering you with it. I'm like, no, ma'am, please ask all the questions you want to about a service animal. If I can help you understand what's going on with veterans and what they're going through and help you maybe treat the next veteran or point that veteran towards me, that means the world to me. Mm-hmm. You never know who you're going to reach out or where you're going to reach out to them at.
Absolutely. We've been talking with Josh Drotty, and I got to thank you very much for joining me for the show, Josh. It's really refreshing to talk with another veteran who's uses a service dog in order to reach out and help his brothers, and it means the world. This has been the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog. My name's Joaquin Watai, and you've been listening to us right here on WDVR DV Radio.
DV Radio.